Welcome to ICTJ's podcast with Silvia Fernandez de Gurmendi, a judge at the International Criminal Court since January 2010. Judge Fernandez, an Argentinian lawyer and diplomat, is also a visiting professor at the American University Washington College of Law's Academy on Human Rights and Humanitarian Law. In this conversation, we will explore the successes and challenges of the International Criminal Court, which is marking its 10th anniversary this year. Judge Fernandez, welcome to ICTJ's podcast.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
You were part of the Argentinian delegation during the negotiations to establish the International Criminal Court, and then in the meantime you served as a member of the committee drafting rules of procedure and evidence. You have also worked in the OTP, Office of the Prosecutor, before being appointed a judge. 10 years on, what would you say is the state of international justice as compared to then, and what has the ICC's contribution been?
Well, first of all, I would say that I think it is amazing of how much has happened since we started the negotiations of the Rome Statute back there in 1995. During the negotiations, I don't think we ever thought that the court would be up and running so early. And the number of ratifications that were required for the treaty to enter into force was very high. So the fact that in only 4 years the treaty entered into force, and that the court was already operational in 2003 is already a huge success that shows that the enthusiasm for the court of the 90s did not decrease. Then lots of things happened in the last 10 years. Actually, it is time to take stock of everything that happened, and we are doing that. We have started an exercise on lessons learned at the court to see what went wrong or what went right, and see whether something needs to be amended. Lots of things happened. The court started investigations and prosecutions in 7 situations. Several trials are on their way, and the first one in Lubanga has just finished on the 14th of March of this year, and now we are waiting for the sentencing and reparations decision. So all these things show that the court hasn't entered into a really full-fledged judicial mood. Which is quite something in just a number of years. Now, we have a lot of, we have successes, we have challenges that we are going to be analyzing now, because of course we all are aware that lots of things happened, but some wished that they could have happened faster. And the length of proceedings have been of concern. And of course, the selection of situations and cases has been also very controversial.
We will get to challenges later, but if you were to, in your opinion, give the International Criminal Court's biggest successes of the past 10 years, what would they be in your mind?
Well, I think one of the big successes of the court is, first of all, its treaty. I think the Rome Statute, with its definitions of crimes, which contains the first comprehensive definition of war crimes and crimes against humanity, is in itself a huge success that has had a tremendous impact for the legislations of the countries. 120 countries have ratified the Rome Statute. Some of them have already adopted implementing legislation, and these definitions, these principles of law, have already been a great and good influence, I would say, to harmonize the legislations of the world on crimes, on international crimes. And so this is already something quite important as a legacy from the court. And also the fact that the court has showed that it can indeed open investigations and can indeed prosecute is a very important step. But of course, we have to remember that the success of the court cannot be measured just in number of cases, because it's a court that is complementary to national jurisdictions. So I think now there is this emerging debate on how much more could the court do in order to be an incentive to be more proactive for national systems to investigate and prosecute. But I think that already the emerging jurisprudence of the court is being studied and is quite important. So, but still, there is a lot of things that need to be done.
At the same time, there have been numerous challenges in the court's work, including the ongoing battle for cooperation and respect of the court's decisions, sometimes even by the state parties. In your mind, what would you identify as the greatest challenges to the court as we speak?
Well, cooperation has always been the greatest challenge for the court and for the international tribunals. Getting cooperation is not an easy thing, because even the countries that support the court, even organizations that support the court in principle, they are not necessarily ready to cooperate in concrete terms with the court for different reasons. Non-governmental organizations in the field, sometimes they feel that cooperating with the court could jeopardize their own mandate. So they are reluctant to cooperate, or they are reluctant to cooperate openly. And that is also problematic, because the court needs this information to be open in order to be able to use it in proceedings. The court also needs not only legal assistance, but a lot of logistical support because of the context where the court needs to operate. So this is also very problematic, because also there are not many countries or many organizations that can cooperate with the court in certain contexts. So it is already a challenge to find those who could support the court, and to try to diversify those who could support the court. And also, of course, providing information on these type of crimes sometimes is very difficult for states because of their national interest, or because their perception of the national interest. So getting this cooperation is very problematic. But the court has received cooperation and has been able to investigate, arrest, and prosecute because it has received cooperation. And it has concluded certain number of agreements with organizations and states that have also complemented the cooperation regime of the statute. So it has been challenging, it has been difficult. We wish it had been more forthcoming, but overall, I think the court has received cooperation enough to investigate and prosecute. But of course, these difficulties to obtain cooperation is what also makes the proceedings sometimes very lengthy and very difficult.
There is also a struggle for legitimacy of the court. And there have been criticisms of the court from certain quarters that it is a political tool in the hands of the Security Council, that it targets overwhelmingly perpetrators from Africa while ignoring its jurisdiction in other parts of the world. How would you respond to these criticisms?
Well, dealing with the issues of legitimacy is always very complicated, because, you know, legitimacy is not only about the truth, but perceptions of the truth. The selection of situations and cases is the most crucial and difficult question that needs to be answered by the court in terms of legitimacy. And in this sense, we have to remember that, first of all, the court has a global aspiration, but has not yet universal participation. And that is already a problem in itself, because it means that the court will not be able to investigate in any country of the world, even if the crimes would deserve for the court to start an investigation. So that is problematic, and that can only be cured with time and more ratifications in order to enhance the participation, and that would also help to diminish this perception of double standard, because the fact that the court cannot start an investigation sometimes for technical reasons can be perceived as a double standard. So that could be cured at least or improved with more participation. Now, the court has opened investigations following independent examinations by the prosecutor as required by the statute, following the different systems of triggering mechanisms of the treaty. In three cases, the state's concerns were the ones that requested the intervention of the court. In two circumstances, it was the Security Council that requested the court to open investigations. And in these two cases, there was a lot of support, international support, for the council to send these situations to the court. So in a way, it would have been problematic if the Security Council had not done so. And then, of course, the prosecutor has also opened its own investigations proprio motu with the authorization of the judges, which also is a way of making sure that the court will be always able to start an investigation regardless of a referral by the council or a state, which is very, very good. But none of these mechanisms itself is enough for to cure external perceptions. That thing that will come with time. The court with time will diversify its investigations in other regions of the world. So this perception that might be prevalent now will, I think, with time should disappear. But I don't think there's much more than the court can do, except that following all the legal steps of its legal framework, and also hoping that more ratifications will also enhance universal participation.
One of the fundamental principles at the core of the ICC's mandate is the principle of complementarity, where national jurisdictions, in fact, have the primary responsibility for investigating and prosecuting international crimes, and the ICC is in a way a court of the last resort. There is a very strong drive to turn this principle into practice in many different places. Where do you think is the ICC's role in this process of making sure that complementarity actually becomes a reality?
Well, there is quite a debate at this moment on exactly that. What would be the role in order to enhance the system of complementarity? During the negotiations, complementarity was approached in a way of in a negative way, in the sense that complementarity was considered to be a barrier for intervention of the court in a concrete case. Now, after 10 years of operations by the court, I think there is more understanding about complementarity being an opportunity for the court, that because it's global, cannot be in all situations and cannot have all the cases. And actually, the fight against impunity requires that both the court and states do their work together in a common system. Now, how much can the court do to be an incentive for states to investigate and prosecute? This is quite difficult to answer. One part of it could be to give some technical assistance, or to give some assistance to national prosecutions. But this has a problem that, of course, this is not within the mandate of the court to help building national capacity or investigating nationally. So the court can share some of its experiences with states, but to a certain extent. Maybe the rest cannot be done by the court itself, but has to be done by states and other organizations. But I think the court has an important role in order to galvanize all these efforts. But the work itself, the technical assistance, building capacity, all this is probably beyond what the court can do.
Complementarity is firmly situated in the wider concept of transitional justice. And you,
yes,
coming from Argentina, a country with a very rich history of transitional justice efforts, seeking to address and redress human rights abuses of the dictatorship. What, in your view, has been the impact on your society of these transitional justice measures?
Well, Argentina has been indeed one country that has put a lot of effort in investigating and prosecuting nationally and to deal with the with our past of abuses in the 70s. And as you know, after the first trials of the juntas in the early 80s, then some laws were passed that have been now derogated, and so there are many prosecutions and investigations that have been reopened. So it is something very important for our society, the rule of law and investigations and prosecution in particular. Now, this has been very important, and this has also been one of the reasons why also Argentina was a very firm supporter of the court from the start. Not because we wanted the court to do our investigations and prosecution. On the contrary, I think we are an example that actually it is good for a society to do these investigations and prosecutions itself when it is possible. But we understood that investigations and prosecutions per se are very important. So when the state cannot do it or do not wish to do them, it is important to have a court of last resort that could bridge this gap. So so the support for the court has been extremely firm from the start and continues to be. And we continue to see this complementarity between what can be done nationally and what can be done internationally. And we believe that is very, very important.
And at the end of this conversation, what would be your message to our audiences as we mark the 10th anniversary of the International Criminal Court?
Well, I would say that it was important for everybody in the court and outside the court to be patient. Because 10 years in institutional terms is really very short. So when we say, oh, we are celebrating already 10 years, so much has happened. Yes, a lot has happened, but still I think the court is at its infancy. And we have to be patient to see how things develop in the longer term. Many of what we see as great dilemmas today might be just cured with time and experience. And also some of the problems we have might need some kind of amendments or some changes in the way we do things. But I think one of the problems, maybe because there was so much enthusiasm with the court, was that there is a huge expectations about it and how much the court can do and how fast it can do it. And I think after 10 years, we need some caution and some patience and to allow this court to develop.
Well, Judge Fernandez, we join your message and thank you very much for being a guest on ICTJ's podcast.
Thank you very much.